I grew up in a very open household with a lot of people around. There were constantly people coming and visiting, and my parents were great and very, very hospitable. And it was fun. It was very fun growing up. So I was always very curious, and we traveled quite a bit growing up. I thought I was definitely more interested in politics and international relations, but never really thought I would be a photographer.
Nor did I realize that photojournalism was really a good marriage between international politics and art, always more internationally. For 3 years I was in America, in New York, but most of my work has been overseas. I originally moved to Istanbul in 2003 to cover the war in Iraq, and have stayed since then because I cover the Middle East and Africa. I've been based here for 4 years. The first 2 years I was basically living in Iraq. Now I'm based here and I travel from here, but rarely work here. That are atypical. I try and choose stories where I can, if someone has a preconception of a country, for example, I like to challenge that. I like to take an idea and present it another way. For example, everyone thinks Muslim women have no personality and no lives because they're covered. Well, I like to explore the opposite. I like to show their lives at home, in the street, at work, to show Americans that just because you wear a veil, it doesn't mean you don't have a brain. I mean, I think it's very important because as an American, I have a big problem with how our government educates people about the Middle East. And I, as a photographer, can try and change misconceptions that are in my own country. I initially entered Iraq in February of 2003, and I really didn't know what to expect. Generally, before I go to a country, I do a lot of research. If it's a war situation, a lot of it's instinct. I was entering with a journalist for the New York Times Magazine who I had never met, who I was actually meeting in Tehran for a few hours, and then we were going to drive into Iraq together. What you see in front of you. I mean, that's the best basis for what a story is, because if you surround yourself by people in the country and not lock yourself in a bureau or in a hotel and try and do your work from there, then you get a sense of where the story is going and what's going on. We all thought the war would be relatively short, something like the Americans would come in, they'd bomb, they'd take Baghdad, it would be victorious, and then we would all go home. But clearly that wasn't the case. So we spent about 3 months in the north. I stayed 7 months in total the first time I entered Iraq, and 7 months of working probably 18 hours a day, I mean, without fail. Every single day was full, and then filing, and I was working primarily for the New York Times Magazine and Time and the New York Times, and it was great. It was exhilarating. We were staying in hotels at that time. No one had really set up bureaus yet, so that was it. when you're a journalist in Iraq, that's the risk you take, that often your colleagues will be kidnapped, they will be injured. It happens pretty often. I mean, many people I know have been in IED attacks, they've been with American soldiers and have been shot at, they have been, you know, taken hostage. It's pretty common. The days are getting more and more tense. It was a team of us. It was Jeffrey, myself, a driver, Waleed, translator, who was Palestinian Iraqi. We went in a car, and then following us was a car of guards. And I remember as we left Baghdad, we were joking that it was so beautiful and that it was the most beautiful day. It was like 10 o'clock in the morning. It was just perfect. The light was beautiful. As we go deeper in, I mean, Fallujah, the drive to Fallujah at that point was very short. I think it was like 45 minutes. We'd see that it was really a no man's land. There were very few people on the street. The only people on the road were wearing all black, their faces wrapped, they had guns, and they were, you know, there were no Americans anywhere. Khalid turned around and said, okay, it's getting bad. And we said, well, should we turn around or should we keep going? And he said, I don't know, but it's getting bad. I don't really know. I think we're about 15 kilometers outside of Fallujah. As we rounded the corner, the entire street was just full of rockets and Kalashnikovs, and everyone had their faces wrapped. And Jeffrey and I's doors were locked in the back seat, and our driver and translator were immediately pulled out of the car. We had made an agreement to say that I was Italian and Jeffrey was Greek. Like, he didn't know a word of Greek, but fortunately I speak Italian and my family is Italian, so I look Italian. The first thing that they asked our driver and translator is, where are they from? Are they American? I'm wearing full hijab, so I basically look Iraqi. And Jeffrey looks very, very, very Western. He unlocks it, they open the door, and they pull him out. And I remember the two gunmen who pulled him out of the car, they looked at me, is she Iraqi, is she Muslim, is she, what is she? And I'm just sitting there like, oh God. And I think they didn't really know what to do with a woman. At that point, my instinct was, if they take an American guy alone, they'll kill him. Because, you know, I think the chances if you're with a woman are better. That was my understanding of the Middle East. So I got out of the car and grabbed Jeffrey's arm and said, this is my husband and we're going together. And they sort of were like, and so then at that point we just stayed together. Jeffrey was really strong and very focused, and I basically just kept my head down and thought, we're dead, we're gonna die. First thing I said to Jeffrey when we turned the corner is I said, if you have anything to say, you should say it now because we are definitely going to die. And he said, we're not going to die. I said, we will die. And so we were sort of bickering the entire sort of time we were detained in the back seat about, like, you know, either I thought he was talking too much or he thought that I was being too negative or whatever. So it was a very funny dynamic in light of the entire situation. They put us into a minivan, a blue minivan. And they kept us in the middle of the road in this village. So we were in the middle of the road, and immediately a commander came over and started asking us questions. He said, you know, are you American? Where are you from? What are you doing here? And again, we just kept reiterating that we were journalists and we were there for them, and that the Americans had closed the roads, but we wanted to show how the civilians were being affected by the siege of Fallujah and what was going on. And to, you know, to please understand that we were simply trying to get both sides of the story. I sort of deferred to Jeffrey to do most of the talking. And I was just, mentally, I was just trying to talk myself through whether we were actually going to live. They never mistreated us. They did keep guns trained on us most of the time. I don't know how long, because I lost concept of time, but the important thing is that they drove away with the original car that we had driven in on, and that car had our bags, my cameras, my passport, Jeffrey's passport, so everything we had with us had drove away by an insurgent. They eventually took us to a headquarters, and at the headquarters they continued to ask us questions, and at that point they brought in one of their own translators. And the guy they brought in was really shady. He was someone that immediately when I saw him, I didn't trust. He was a guy who was, I think he was Palestinian Brit, and he said he was a journalist. He gets in the car, And he says, okay, if you're lying about your nationalities, just say it. And we both were like, we're not lying. The commander continued to ask us questions. And finally, he was asking us where the New York Times Bureau was, what our phone numbers were, did we have thirayas, what we were doing, why we were there. At a certain point, he said, well, why don't you show us your press passes? And I said, well, you drove away with our car, and that had everything you owned, and go get our car, and we'll show you, you know, whatever. He gestures to someone, and our car is driven back in. And strangely, he had me go get all of our stuff, and he kept Jeffrey in the car. I was wearing a big abaya. While I was staying in the car, I took my passport out of the bag and put it in my pants. And then I went back to the car. He saw my cameras, and he said, let us see your cameras. When they were scrolling through the back of my cameras, they saw, fortunately that morning I had woken up at like 6 o'clock in the morning and went to Sutter City, and there was a funeral going on, and they were carrying these bodies through Sutter City, and all of the men had their faces wrapped, and he looked at those pictures and he realized that indeed we were journalists and we had been working, you know, all day. And so when the guys who had taken us saw these pictures, they were sort of pleased. They were sort of, you know, oh, who are these guys? They're also insurgents, and look at that. A guy walked out of the house with a bowl, this tin bowl of water. I turned to Jeffrey and I said, this means hospitality, this means they're finally gonna release us, and you know. And I said, Jeffrey, drink as much as you can, this means we're gonna be let go. And so then Jeffrey's drinking, and then I drink the water, and then they said, and now we would like to offer you Coca-Cola for a sign of hospitality. And so we were all laughing. At that point, they started firing rockets over our heads. There was a Marine base very close by. And it was a loud sound, and they were firing. They probably fired at least 10, maybe 20 rockets towards the Marine base. The commander turns to the guy who had been acting as a translator. I think his name was Gareb. And he said, okay, lead them out of the city. They're free to go. And Gareb says, okay, I'll do that. And then the commander leaves, and I say, can I take photos? And he said, no, just get out of here. And I tried, because I really wanted to take photos. So then at that point, we leave. We get in the car, and we're driving away. And Gareb, at that point, who was supposed to take us out of the city, at this point it's about 3 o'clock in the afternoon, I would say, he says, actually, you can't leave yet, because we have just fired on the Marines, and if the Marines counterfire, then everyone's gonna think that you left and you told the Marines where we are, and then it's your fault that they've attacked back. And so because of that, you're not allowed to leave. And we said, but the commander said we can leave. And at this point, Jeffrey started getting nervous, and he started saying, look, if we spend the night here, they're gonna kill us. And Gareb at that point said, I wanna say one thing. You better tell your friend Jeffrey to keep his mouth shut. And if he says one more word, I'll kill him. And I said, okay, so I get back in the car and I go, don't open your mouth again. So then we continue, and they took us to a safe house. And there was another man whose house it was. He sat with us in the living room. They brought us tea, they brought us biscuits, and he was very nice. Jeffrey fell asleep. He was so stressed that he just fell asleep on the floor. I, as a woman, obviously can't just lie down and fall asleep in front of a room full of men, so I was just sitting there. And so at that point, the owner of the house said, come and meet my wife and children. I said, okay. So he leads me in the back through the house, and I'm sitting in the kitchen with his wife, and we're sitting on these stools. And behind us are her two children. And it was the most incredible image, because they were 5 years old. You know, I mean, these were kids that were children. They should be out playing, and instead, they're basically sitting in the mirror wrapping their faces like insurgents. I went back, and at that point, Gareb, the translator, who I didn't trust from the beginning, it was starting to get dark, and he said, he started asking us some more questions, and then he said, we don't know if we're gonna let you go or not tonight. We're gonna go out and take some pictures and walk around and see what's happening. At about 7 o'clock, right before it's almost too late to be able to drive on the road from Fallujah back to Baghdad, he comes back. And he and the owner of the house and one other man in all black go. They're standing outside of the house, and Jeffrey and I are watching through the window. And Jeffrey says, we're gonna die. I said, we're not gonna die. He said, we're gonna die. Look at them, they're negotiating how to kill us. Finally, the owner of the house comes in and he says, come outside. So we come outside, and the man says, and the man who was in all black, who was the new man, he looks at Jeffrey and me, and he says, okay, get in the car. They say, no, give us your Thoraya phone. The translator then says, I'm going to call the New York Times and just make sure you work with the New York Times. And the owner of the house got really angry at the translator. Clearly there was a power struggle. And he grabs the Thoraya that Jeffrey had given him, and he gives it back to Jeffrey, and he said, get in the car. And he pointed to me and he said, you lie down on the ground of the car. And he wraps his face and he gets in the front seat, and we drive out. He drives us out. And then they release us. It was pretty shocking. So that was it. We leave. For a day, so I don't think, you know, it was such an intense day and such a day where we didn't know if we would live or die, and our minds were very focused. I mean, I think now that I've been out of Iraq for some time, I realize how long it took me to sort of get over being out of Iraq. For a long time, you know, after we were taken hostage, we were released, and the next day 30 people were taken hostage. You know that that we're basically doing this job for the civilians in the country and for people to basically educate people in our own countries on what's happening. I mean, we're only there as sort of witnesses and people to document what's going on. I don't think it's right that journalists are then victims of the insurgency or the Americans and then become part of the war. I think that our role is to be neutral and to be there and to document.
Something happened to you, then what would be the case now?
I don't know, I wouldn't be standing here on this balcony, that's for sure. My life would have ended prematurely because I have a lot more to do. Yeah.
Do you have any statistics?
On journalists who have been injured? No, I don't know. I covered Iraq. I was obsessed with Iraq. I couldn't get out. I was addicted to the adrenaline, to the story, to the people, to their lives, to where it was going. And it was very, very hard to stop going. I mean, it really took a lot for me to stop going. Started to become disillusioned, and little by little, the American soldiers who were sort of maintaining the security of the city were really overwhelmed. There were 18-year-old kids from Nebraska who had basically never been abroad, and they were there to run a country and to maintain order. And you know, they had no sense of how to treat the locals. They had no idea what Arab society was like. They didn't know anything about respect and respect of women. And, you know, they would walk, I would go on house-to-house raids with them, or I would go with them on patrols, and I just couldn't believe how they had no idea of the situation they were getting into, and it wasn't their fault. I mean, they're just soldiers, you know. It was clearly the fault of the American government. And when the insurgency started, it was, as a journalist, it was very hard to cover. Freedom.
when the Americans wanted you to have freedom of speech, you would have it. But when they didn't, you wouldn't have it. I mean, I remember several times I would go to photograph an IED explosion far after they had cleared away bodies or tanks, and the Americans would put their guns on me and say, you know, we'll kill you. You can't take a photograph. And that's when I realized, like, freedom of speech was tenuous ground. It was basically when it was convenient for the Americans.
What extent American soldiers, I mean American forces, can help Iraqi people?
Now? I mean, I think that what they can do now is pretty limited. I mean, I think that their intentions are good and that they want to help, but I don't think Iraqis trust them anymore, unfortunately. I mean, maybe they can help with basic things like, you know, trying to maintain security in the civil war, but I just think it's too late. You know, in the beginning, I didn't embed with them coming in the beginning of the war because I thought it would be much more limiting. There are things that are frustrating. You're not allowed to photograph dead bodies. The American, I guess they learned in Vietnam. You're not allowed. You can't photograph dead Americans. He was injured in Fallujah. That's his mother and sister behind him. This was in Baghdad. This is in a morgue. This is after a car bombing in 2004. It was a different time. I mean, it was more sort of Americans versus Iraqis rather than Iraqis versus Iraqis.
Nice.
These are mass graves. These are people looking for the bodies of their relatives. This is the day that Kirkuk fell. And everyone was celebrating all over the city and tearing up pictures of Saddam, and especially the Kurds. Mm-hmm. I would go on top of someone. I mean, I'd go right up to someone. I like to be very close, if they let me. I mean, you have to feel people out. I mean, sometimes you could tell immediately if you could, mm-hmm. how close you can get. Mm-hmm. I generally shoot wide angle. I keep two camera bodies, and one has a wide zoom lens and one has a fixed lens.
Follow the Iraq news?
Not anymore. No. I mean, I watch it, but I don't, you know.
Which channel do you use usually? CNN? And
I use CNN, BBC, and Jazeera English.
How do you think your photos is close to the truth in Iraq?
Because basically I just did my best to document what I saw, so I mean...
You're satisfied with what you have done?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm never satisfied, but I mean, I did the best I could. So this is a book with a bunch of different photographers. I have some pictures in here. I think there are five of us. These two are mine.